Welcome to another edition of El Paso Primetime. I'm Dennis Wu, sitting in for the rest of the band. Wait till you hear what the rest of the band is up to, then you'll understand why I'm kind of like the Lone Ranger of sorts. Joining us again from the El Paso Veterinary Association is John Brooker and Randy Chenault. Welcome, guys, back to the show.
Thanks for having me
here.
Hey, yeah. This is fun.
Absolutely.
Listen, I had such a great time at y'all's dinner.
Well, good. You enjoyed it, huh?
Yeah, I did. Actually, I came away with a prize.
Did you really?
A door prize. The photo.
Did you really?
Yeah, fox and agave.
Oh, that was a neat picture.
That was beautiful.
That was impressive, the whole thing. So good. I'm glad somebody won it that we know.
You
know,
set that up for you specifically. You understand that.
So it was fixed.
Well, I'm in charge of the door prize.
Yeah, Brooker's the door prize guy, so you know.
There you go.
Yeah, you notice we didn't win anything. I mean, what the heck is that all about? So it's like,
well, even if we didn't win anything, we would have had a good time anyway. I did tell you, I had a real good time.
Yeah, it was a good turnout this year. I think we had, 450 people or so at least. So that's what we set up. You remember how many? I think it was about close to that we set up for.
Yeah, that's right on.
Yeah.
Well, John and Randy, you know, it's the holidays are here, the holidays. You know, that's called the Memorial Day holiday, a holiday, right? But it's also leading into the summer, and with that is always the danger of leaving your pet in the car, whether it's a dog, cat, could be a mongoose. Heaven knows why you would want one, but it's there. You got to take precautions, kids.
Oh, absolutely. This is probably your more area of expertise, being the emergency guy, so...
It truly is amazing that every year you'll still see somebody that has, you know, thinks that they're just going to, you know, be in and out of some place real quick. You know, they have all the best intention, but it only takes, you know, moments to overheat, you know, especially for pets. Humans actually can probably handle it a little longer than dogs can because of the panting versus sweating. But yeah, don't leave them in. I mean, you got to have windows rolled down and be parked in the shade for Absolutely. To have any time to spare.
I got in my truck this afternoon to come over here. The thermometer read 117.
Oof.
Yeah.
Mongoose was unfazed.
Yeah.
Mongoose with shades, the whole 9 yards.
Yeah,
it
was chilling back there, man. Yeah, there's fan on and the whole bit. So no, but that was shocking to me to read that. And I mean, it was like 1 o'clock in the afternoon, so give that another hour or two sitting out there, and you know, there's no telling. And inside the truck was probably, I mean, you know, certainly way more than that. I mean, it was warm in there when I got in there. So
yeah, so the word for all of y'all who happen to be listening right now is, you know, got to really take care of your pet. Be cognizant of the interior temperature of your ride. It doesn't matter what it is. You know, dogs don't sweat. Cats don't either, right?
That's correct.
See, I didn't know. We hadn't done anything on felines, and I know there was a lady who had called after the show ran. It's like, how come you didn't talk about cats? We'll talk about y'all in a little bit.
Yeah.
And you can tell a dog to stay in your car, mm-hmm. but the cat, when you open the door, you look around and your cat's gone already.
You know, the cat will find a way to get out. That's right. Cats are Houdinis, man. They're going to get out and they're going to do whatever. Or they're going to make you pay severely for leaving them in that car. Your car will not be the same when you get back in there after an angry cat has been in there. So
mm-hmm.
that, I can guarantee you that. So.
Yep. So, you know, there are so many different little ways to make sure that your pet is nice and cool in the vehicle. But, you know, the best thing is if you don't have to take your pet, why would you?
Yeah, leave them at home if you're going to get out of the car and not take the pet with you.
You led right into what I was thinking, and I was going to work that in. It's just, you know, during this time of the year, it's just not really logistically sound to be taking your pet with you all the time. I mean, we all love to be with our pets, and they're wonderful to companions and the whole bit. But, you know, the last thing we need to do, if you love them that much, to have to come out and find some catastrophic issue that we have created on our own, I mean, that's just not necessary. And you're better off where they are comfortable, where they have water, where they have, you know, cool temperatures to get in and out of the temperature. And that's even in the backyard at this time of the year. You know, I mean,
right.
You know, we see a lot of heat stroke, and I've had several of them that, you know, I mean, well-meaning people. I mean, a guy took his dogs out running in the desert one morning you know, in the middle of the summer, and it was not that hot yet. But that dog, you know, I mean, we had a black lab. I mean, and obviously dark-coated animals are much more susceptible to, you know, thermal issues than even light-coated ones. But, I mean, they're all susceptible. And
yeah, even in your garage, you know, leaving them in your garage, you have more time than a car. But that can be touch and go if it, you know, they knock over the water bowl and there's no ventilation and you're gone all day.
Ventilation's the key. I mean, if they're confined anywhere with no air circulation, I mean, that is a big crisis no matter what. I mean, and like John said, even in the inside where you think it's relatively safe, I mean, it can be really uncomfortable. So,
yeah. So these are the keys in order to make sure that your pet's comfortable while you're here locally doing your thing in and out. What about pets who have to travel from El Paso to L.A., Chicago on a plane, train, you know, bus, that sort of a thing? Now what are we looking at?
In that instance, do keep them with you wherever you go.
Yeah.
You know, if possible, you know, have them with you.
Right.
The airlines tend to do, you know, you always hear a horror story now and then, but the airlines and the buses, they tend to have a lot more security checks in place now than they have in the past, I would say.
Well, and a lot of the airlines I know have temperature restrictions, and it may be fine here, but your destination or your time that you get there, if it's over a certain degree, and they all have their own, you know, within normal tolerances of what they consider okay, but there and cold, conversely, in the cold weather too, you know, because they can't guarantee that these flights are not going to be sitting on the tarmac for a while, and they won't load animals or whatever, so they have restrictions. And so definitely if you're traveling, that's something you really need to think about as well, is what the airline carrier. A lot of them are letting them on the plane now too. I mean, in the cabin, animals are not as restricted as they used to be because airlines are becoming more aware of the, you know, human-animal bond that has definitely gotten a lot more out there where people understand.
Well, I have to tell you, to be quite honest with you, this is kind of like letting the dog out of the bag, if you will. But one of the reasons why I didn't get married in 2005 like I was supposed to is because this woman insisted that I put my 15-pound Fox Terrier in the cargo hold of a Delta airliner over in Atlanta on December 18th.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, I'm sorry. 32 degrees on the tarmac inside this plane. This little dog is not going to, she ain't going to last.
She's not going to be happy at no, least anyway. That's
right. So I got to thinking, okay, I've had Xena for X amount of years.
You don't have to confess in front of me and John. It's okay, Dennis. We're all right, man. You know, there's no.
Yeah, no. If somebody is going to make you choose between, you know, the pet or me, then,
yep,
you know, obviously the pet wins.
Right. And so Xena's celebrating her 15th birthday tomorrow, so we're good.
Wow. Well, there tell her go. Happy birthday from us. You know, that's.
But you did miss an opportunity to bring in cats. You said letting the dog out of the bag.
Yep.
It's the cat out of the bag.
Oh, there you go. Go. Well, see.
That's why John's here. You know, he's got that.
You're
take
my
it out of the box, man, yep, or out of the bag, I guess I should say, right?
You're our conscience. So let's talk about felines for a while. And one of the more severe things that does happen is feline leukemia.
Yeah, see quite a bit of that in primarily younger guys. And I say guys because it is primarily seems to be more of a male dominated, although it is transmissible through from mom to the babies in utero. If a mom is pregnant and is positive, there is a likelihood that they could be, that the babies could be born with feline leukemia as well. Certainly it's a direct contact, you know, salivary type transmission, upper respiratory, hissing, fighting, you know, biting, those sorts of things. And we do see quite a bit of it. It is more common in, obviously, the outdoor feral guys. I mean, an indoor cat that does not go outside is at a low risk for feline leukemia. We still recommend, or I still recommend, vaccination for all kittens, even indoor cats, as a complete series the first year and a booster. And then we gauge whether their exposure is all about. That's kind of the thing that I generally try and recommend with leukemia and even a lot of the other viruses that we see. I mean, you know, rabies is a requirement, but they're probably at a much more higher risk for, you know, contagious diseases, thank goodness, than rabies. I mean, rabies being a zoonotic between me and you kind of a or between animals and us. And it's one of those deals that is very important to vaccinate all the time.
Right.
But, you know, risk is a something that needs to be assessed by you and your veterinarian.
Oftentimes, John, you'll see something that comes in that turns out to be feline leukemia, and an owner won't know what it is but knows that the cat's not as chipper as it used to be. How do you prepare an owner at that emergency level clinic to tell them, listen, you got a problem?
Every scenario is different. Typically, we can look at a situation and say, this has been going on a lot longer than you might think it is, you know, than the history that you've been giving me. So usually that is by just getting more and more history, really taking them back as far as you can. And then all of a sudden, you'll have this little picture that you can present back to them. So really 3 months ago was the first time that you thought it might have been just due to the heat or whatever. But now thinking about now, he's obviously ill today. You know, he's probably been sick since the less active 3 months ago. And that's when it's become visual. And so it was probably even before that. I could wake up normal yesterday, wake up today, feel like I have a cold or flu coming on. You know, I go into work and nobody's going to know it unless I say I feel like I have a cold or flu coming on. Whereas, your pet can never say that till I've obviously either have this either coming out of my body or I'm losing weight or whatever.
You know, I'm seeing a lot of parvo right now or the beginnings of parvo, and it's always this time of the year. I say always this time of the year. I mean, it tends to be a spring and fall clustering, I think, because of temperature variations and things like that. But, you know, that's one of the things that's really disheartening, because every year we see this, and these are always unvaccinated puppies, or even I took one in today that's a 6-month-old dog that hadn't been vaccinated but one time. And, you know, complete vaccination is so critical for younger animals, like we were talking about with the cats.
Mm-hmm.
And the parvo vaccine's really good at preventing parvo virus, provided it's a complete series of vaccinations. And that's is so disheartening to me when I see a young puppy that's sick and, boy, these guys are miserable. You know, I mean, they are really uncomfortable. They're vomiting, diarrhea, and it's just not a happy time. And it's really a struggle on a lot of these guys, especially the real tiny ones. And unfortunately, we've gotten, you know, I mean, I should say fortunately, we've gotten a lot better at treating them, but unfortunately, not all of them are making it still. You know, I mean, it's a bad disease that, you know, it's just not something that – it's totally preventable, and I think that's the frustrating thing, you know.
What does it take, really, guys, to educate people in all strata that things like parvo, like feline leukemia, like rabies, like distemper can be stemmed? Well, what kind of education needs to be done so that people are hip to this?
That's the million-dollar question, you know.
Okay. And if there was an answer to that, then you could apply that answer to just about every education type of need. It assumes that everybody is exactly the same. Number one, and with pets, that pet is a member of the family. This person over here wants a dog, but if it's not that dog, it's, you know, the next dog that doesn't die. Now from our end, the job is relatively simple. We assume every pet is a member of the family. Whoever comes in, we, you know, talk to them like that, treat them like that, and then they let you know where they are, you know, through the course of discussion, you know, where that pet stands. But Randy.
Yeah, you know, I mean, dealing with that, and I think John's exactly right. I mean, because, you know, it seems so simple. And like John said, if it was that simple, I mean, we wouldn't have the problem with, you know, I mean, we have a hard time getting our children vaccinated on a regular basis, you know,
right.
I mean, for different things. And there's sadly in El Paso, I mean, we're vaccinating upwards of 100,000 animals for rabies, and we can track that more or less because of our city licensing program. But there's a lot more than 100,000 animals out there, and it may be there's a certain point where we have to really be kind of concerned, because the idea is that this is a quote herd concept, and you can vaccinate a percentage of the herd and achieve kind of a desired immunity that will kind of transmit across the entire population, if that makes sense. And in other words, if we vaccinate, say, 75 to 80% of the animals, then our risk of that disease goes way down as mm-hmm. as an epidemic. You know, right now, rabies. You know, we've kind of gotten somewhat complacent, I think, as a population. In the early 60s, I mean, El Paso was the rabies capital of the world. Oh, we had more rabies in El Paso County than the entire world did. And that's when the city started the mandatory vaccination and licensing program that it has, and it's been very successful because of that. Every year, there's always a risk. I mean, we've had rabies encroach in the wild animal. And every year, I mean, we think rabies is non-existent. But, I mean, how many bats?
Yeah, bats, skunks, foxes.
You know, there's still a bunch of rabies out there that we have to be extremely concerned about. And, you know, unfortunately, I think one of the biggest things that has helped stem that population, there's other diseases that will kill the animal faster, i.e. parvo or distemper, that they never get exposed to rabies. And I think in an unvaccinated population like that, I think that's what's – I think is what's caused the numbers to really decrease dramatically since the 80s when parvo kind of came along and started wiping out all the unvaccinated animals. So
trying to educate people to take care of their animals – to me, has been an ongoing fight that we've all been fighting, whether it's the media, whether it's the Veterinary Association, whether it's been city, county, whatever. I mean, I just don't get how people can't think twice about vaccinating. Is it the money issue? Is it a fear of because they hadn't done it for a couple of years, they're going to be put in jail or given a ticket for maltreatment of an animal? What is it?
I think it's all of those. I mean, I don't think we can put our finger on one deal because – we've tried, you know, giving free vaccinations, you know, and you might get a little bump in the numbers, but then it drops right off. And then it's not about – I don't think it's money. I don't think it's – I think some people may have a fear that, oh, I'm going to get in trouble. But, you know, I think it boils down to, you know, understanding and assuming the responsibility of what pet ownership is all about. I mean, I think in the general, I mean, I think that – in our community, and I say our community, I think nationwide, like John said, are they what we assume is what, you know, are they part of our family, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like Xena, I mean, you know, you wouldn't think twice about it. I mean, if Xena needed something, you'd take care of it. But
right.
The point is not everybody feels like we do, you know, and I think that's the problem. And I understand to a point, you know, there are other responsibilities that we all have. I mean, we got family members, we got children, we got, you know, whatever it takes. And I think there's a whole lot of factors that we can – I mean, if it was that simple to say, well, there's the problem, we could fix it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I don't think there's any one thing that we can do but keep preaching to the choir about what needs to be done, you know, I think probably.
Almost certainly most people have the good intention, but life gets in the way and they – by the time they realize, oh, I never did get those vaccines, you know, they're – looking at me across the table.
Yeah.
Yeah. And unfortunately, treatment is way more expensive than vaccinations. And I mean, and people are waiting because it's like, oh, I don't know. And you know, you'll hear people, oh, I've never had him vaccinated in his whole life. Well, you know, you're lucky, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like going, man, I speed on the freeway and I haven't gotten a ticket yet. Well, you know, one of these days.
Yep, the numbers, you know, are going to catch up
absolutely.
Here, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, I mean, and it's kind of one of those deals. And I think it's just a matter of, you know, when you draw the short straw, and that's you, but this is something you can prevent. And that's, I think, you know, financially, whatever it is, it's there are a lot of things in there's programs in place that the city has done, like you mentioned, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's all kinds of things. And so I don't know. I don't know if there's an easy answer to get people on board with the whole idea about what we're seeing, you know.
Well, I don't want to rattle the litter box too much. See, there's a cat
there's
reference.
There's a cat thing. Hey, nice job.
Thank you.
Slid that right in.
Mongoose and cat.
There you go. But one of the things that I wanted to hit on for folks that are thinking, well, it won't happen to me, we have a drought going on, which means that the wild animals are starting to encroach into the suburban areas. So you folks over on the west side, northeast, even central, they're coming in. If you're thinking, oh, my pet will never get rabies, won't get distemper, won't get – guess again. They're looking for water. They're looking for food. No blame on them. They're just doing what they're supposed to do.
Yeah, they're trying to survive.
Right.
Yeah, you know, and that's exactly right. And the drought you mentioned historically has caused these types of problems. You know, we've been in a drought for the last 2 years for sure, maybe three. This year's not looking a whole lot better. And if you look at back, and I was talking with Ken Waldrop, our state veterinarian, who's really big into, you know, rabies control, and that's his job.
Right.
And he said this year is kind of mirroring what we had with the last close encroachment that we had, which was over in Silver City. You know, I mean, that's – but it gets closer and closer and closer to our area.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like you said, I mean, there's a lot of reasons for that. But, I mean, when their animals are looking for whatever it is, food, water, anything – where are you going to find it? You know, I mean, in the pool or in the, you know, somebody's backyard.
Yep.
I mean, how many times, I'm sure living where you live, and I live in the valley, and I mean, I've had skunks in my backyard, you know, and we've seen raccoons and foxes, and like you said, and that's, I had a coyote run across the front yard not that long ago.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just, it's a matter of time, and God forbid one of those animals becomes rabid, you know, in a neighborhood where, you know, that's scary. I mean, and again, more importantly is the, you know, children, you know, oh, look, there's a little bobcat, you know, and,
uh-huh.
you know, you get bit and all of a sudden, you know, they're going through rabies prophylaxis vaccines. And, you know, there's a lot of issues that people not necessarily think about. So.
It's a kitty. Yeah. And I've seen that before. And the problem that we have here at UTEP is now we're under this massive construction effort. So now we've upset our own flora and fauna to a point where we're going to see a lot of problems in current place. I hate to break it to y'all, but the feral cat population is going to be scattered because of all the work. And we've had skunks here on campus now for years. Zena's seen one. It's like, no, don't go talk
yeah.
to, you know, the Pepiliputhers sort of a thing. I guess my point is that no matter who you are, where you are, you got to take care of what you got.
Many times the client will say, I mean, one of the questions we ask, you know, every pet owner that comes in, you know, is he indoor, outdoor? And many times they'll say he's only indoor. And then you ask a question or two kind of related to that because you know they're lying.
Yeah. The cat with the big abs says it lives by himself in the house that's always indoors. Yeah. It's like, yeah.
Well, he only goes outside when I go. Like that means, you know, he doesn't go outside. Or, you know, how did he get here? You know, he had to come outside. It's statistics. But if they go outside for any reason, especially cats, the lifespan of a cat that lives outdoors is like, what, 4 years? Whereas a cat that's truly a totally indoor cat is closer to 18.
Yeah. Like the feral cats is what you're talking about, an outdoor cat that's living
right,
on his own. Yeah.
Yeah. And so those that are going in and out are somewhere in between.
Well, they're the exposure, again, to the feline leukemia and all these other things that are bad out there. I mean, besides infectious diseases, I mean, you know, you run the risk of antifreeze poisoning at this time of the year. I mean, car's boiling over, and it's hot. They're drinking water. Antifreeze is sweet, and, you know, a teaspoon probably, right, is about all it takes for a cat.
Yeah, on a cat.
That's it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, yeah, it doesn't take much. So, I mean, people don't realize how critical that is, and unfortunately, symptoms don't show up until they're pretty much gone.
Right.
I mean, if you see them.
Yeah. Well, so if a cat comes or a pet, a cat, dog, usually if you see it, drink the antifreeze and you get them right in, you've got a reasonable chance of
correct.
Stopping it from being fatal. if you don't see it and you just suspect it, and you and the first thing you might see is that the pet just looks kind of drunk because it is an alcohol. At that point, if you have symptoms and you do blood work and it shows kidney concerns, then you've got a real poor chance. If you see the clinical symptoms, you know, the pet just not acting right, and you have normal blood work, then you still have a chance. But you don't want to mess with that. And people are changing there. It's not only those that actually boil over, but just now they're changing the, you know, it's hot now, I need to change my antifreeze, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen a number of places along Yandell, down in the older part of Yandell, right around Brown, where there are massive puddles of antifreeze.
Yeah,
where they've been changing their cars.
Yeah, it's green. It's
hard
to miss, you know, but, you know, and that kind of goes along with everything. Unfortunately, you know, they're not going to come in and go, man, I just had the coolest stuff. I drank this green liquid, you know, and it tasted really good. You know, they're not going to tell you that. And, I mean, you know, that's the sad thing. I mean, rodenticides are another one that I see a lot, you know. I mean, you know, animals come in and they're rat poisons, you know. And, I mean, unless you see it and you see the after effects, I mean, that can be pretty wicked as well. So, I mean, they're really good at doing things and not telling us is the problem, you know, until it's too late.
You know, possibly, you know, tying it all together, we're in a drought. So all the animals are going to start migrating towards where most of the, you know, the trash, which has now become food, and the lawn watering, you know, so the rodent population, the only liquid on the road is antifreeze. You're seeing more rodents because they're now moving inside because they need this or that. And so you put out your mouse poison, yeah, you got to be real careful.
Yeah, I think it's called know what you're doing and think about what you're doing before you do it. You know, yeah. I mean, that's so many of us have a knee-jerk reaction. It's like, oh, I saw a mouse. Well, yeah, okay. You know, well, so what are you going to do? I mean, you know, it's like a mouse. You know, I mean, it's.
Get a cat.
There you go.
There we go.
Working that cat in there. Way to go, John.
Adopt a cat today.
That's it.
If anyone has any questions at all, do they call either one of you? They can call their vet, or do they call the Veterinary Association?
Well, Randy's number is 555.
J-O-H-N. John. No. Yeah, I think your veterinarian is probably the best source of information for you. And absolutely. I mean, I know that, you know, we'll be happy to answer questions anytime we can. But, you know, the best place to do it, there's not a you know, develop a relationship with your veterinarian before something happens is probably a good idea. You know, that's always good advice.
One of the worst things that we can do with a phone call, though, is to act like we really know. I mean, what you're describing to me over the phone may be totally different than what I would be thinking if I'm looking at that pet. So.
Expect an answer or a diagnosis over the phone.
Well, mi casa su casa, we need to get you back here because we're coming up to the 4th of July weekend, so that we need to talk about sedating a pet somewhat without having to use any kind of, you know, a severe sedative. There are ways to do that, and I think we could talk about that then. Plus, we're still in the midst of a summer heat, so we can come back and do that too.
We can do that.
Cool deal. John Brooker and Randy Chenault have been our guests here on El Paso Primetime, twiddling the dials and back. It's been Elvin Alves II. Thank you so much for everything. Thanks for listening to El Paso Primetime.